11. I'm joined in the studio by Sizwe Mpofu-Walsh, who is an author, an activist, rapper, and also a doctoral student at Oxford University. He also went to St. John's College. Sizwe, thank you so much for coming in.
Good to be with you, CBS.
And Marcus Atrengo, who is a London-based student in philosophy, who also went to the school. I haven't seen you in years, quite literally.
Thanks
he was
so much
this
for
small
us.
When I last saw him, as all people say. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. Yeah.
And on the line, Danae, let's just see. I hope the line works. We've also got the chair of the council at St. John's College, Dr. John Patricius. John, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've got a very busy morning at the school. I appreciate you taking time out.
You're most welcome. Good morning, everybody.
John, I'm going to start with you. I think that certainly our listeners are familiar with some of the issues in the last 24 hours that have been in the public space around the teacher at school that had been found guilty of racism, quite frankly. And also an interview yesterday of the headmaster with my colleague Bongani Bingo on the afternoon drive show. The first question I had as this whole thing is playing out in the public space is, does St. John's College, as we are speaking, have an anti-racism policy?
Good morning, Eusebius. The truth is that we don't have an anti-racism policy, but we are busy devising one as part of our transformation and diversity criteria. So one of the issues that has been raised as part of this is that although we take a firm anti-racism stand publicly, we don't have it documented. And that's something that is being put in place as part of a number of steps in terms of our transformation and diversity process, is to come up with a charter for our entire community to embrace, whether you're a pupil or a parent or a staff member or a member of council. So you're quite right. That is something that as a community we're busy addressing at the moment.
Isn't it weird that you don't have one?
It is. I agree with you. And I think one of the problems is as a community and as a country, we don't confront issues of race firmly in the eye enough. And I think that's what we've got to do. We have to sit around a table. We have to acknowledge that post-1994, these are still issues that we face every day, whether you're in a school or elsewhere, but particularly for us, because we don't want to escape the current situation we're in. We don't want to deny it. We have to address it and, if necessary, formalize that process. And it is something that we've recognized as a deficiency and something we will do.
The letter that had been sent out to parents explaining how you have dealt now at the end of this misconduct investigation that had been concluded said that there were some mitigating factors, which is why this teacher that had been found guilty of racism hasn't lost their job. They've been demoted, taken a salary cut, and will apologize and what have you. What were those mitigating factors?
The independent chairperson, who was a senior counsel, I think found a number of mitigating factors in terms of the fact that the teacher had a good track record as a teacher, that he had a number of pupils who held him in high regard as a geography teacher, that he had apologized to the school before the process was even instituted, and that there were the duration of the process in terms of the legalities had taken its toll on him because he had to contribute to his own legal fees and defense. So I think those were the main mitigating factors in the situation.
Are you, from the point of view of the council, are you satisfied with how the matter has been handled by the institution?
Today, as I stand speaking to you, I'm not. Now, I say that because the process was meant to be one of trying to embrace restorative justice. And that's what was encouraged by the chair of the hearing, who said that in his findings that really there's the international concept of restorative justice is one of incorporating the perpetrators as part of the solution. And the church to whom we are accountable, the Anglican Church, headed in our case by our visitor or patron, the Right Reverend Steve Moreo, also encouraged us to follow that path. So to understand that we need to try and include the perpetrators in any sort of restorative process that we might follow. What I think perhaps we failed to acknowledge at school is that this is not just a school issue. that this is a societal issue, and we've realized that certainly in the last 48 hours with the extent of the discussion around this. And we mustn't escape from that. I think it's something we have to acknowledge. So at the moment, you know, in the where it sits in a very public space and has put St. John's in a poor light and compromised what we regard as one of the premier educational institutions in the country, I, as the chairperson, am not happy with the situation going forward, and hence I'm at the school today to address that.
Would it not have been more decisive to simply fire him?
I think it would have, in some respect, but that would have gone against the principles that the Anglican Church was encouraging us to follow, and also in terms of what the chairperson recommended in his findings.
Which part of the Anglican Church's principles would not recommend that you deal decisively with a racist?
Well, it would be the manner in which they recommend that we deal with a racist, to try and get him to see the error of his ways, to acknowledge that in a public way, and then to embrace measures going forward to try and correct that.
So the Anglican Church ethos that the school is founded on requires of your institution to mollycoddle racists. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that restorative justice is a recognized concept and one way of trying to address these situations.
Okay.
As it turned out, it hasn't worked that way, and we need to relook at the situation.
Okay, I want to bring in some of the your school has produced brilliant South Africans. I am very very chuffed to know and befriend some of them as well, and that's partly why I think it's so in the spotlight, because many people have a soft spot for your brand, John. You and I have spoken before on the radio. Sizwe, I want to bring you in here.
At the school, I know you have. Yes,
yeah. What do you make of how the school that you attended have handled the matter, and what do you think as you listen to John's responses?
Well, look, I'm glad that it seems that slow progress is being made and already some concessions are being made, but quite frankly, I think the response has been shameful. I think it's been abominable and it's been embarrassing, and Dr. Patricius's remarks themselves are still not good enough. How 23 years after democracy does a school like St. John's not have an anti-racism policy? That's actually something that I handed to the school when I was the deputy head boy there in 2006. So we can't say there haven't been efforts to create this. The school has failed abominably on that score. What mitigating circumstances could there possibly be for multiple cases of racial abuse? I don't care what this teacher's reputation was. Racism is bad enough that nothing matters if you're accused of and guilty of racial abuse. There are no mitigating circumstances for racial abuse. And finally, this notion of restorative justice is quite frankly nonsense. Reconciliation does not mean impunity. You can still have reconciliation with a fired teacher. In fact, when this teacher is fired, and I hope it happens soon, he should be coming back to the school to apologize as well. We cannot distinguish between reconciliation and accountability and suggest that because we've given this teacher impunity, there's now suddenly reconciliation. I'm happy for reconciliation to occur once justice has occurred and once the school and the teacher and the senior executive and the council have been held responsible. So this reconciliation argument is absolute hogwash, and it's being used as a veneer to shade and guard the school from the accountability that it deserves.
Marcus, before I bring you in here, John, sure. I just want to ask you, I mean, Sizwe makes a powerful point, doesn't he, that reconciliation does not a priori require you to not fire someone. If someone is genuinely remorseful for their character flaws, then presumably they would take being fired on the chin and still reconcile.
I think that's a good point, and you know, the principle is really one of moving on to these and showing decisive action on racism, and I think the point coming across is that we haven't done that effectively enough. So I acknowledge Caesar's point of view. As you said, he's someone who has achieved wonderful things, and he's contributed both inside the school and out. So I do acknowledge that there are different ways of approaching this, and the way that the school has approached this in terms of trying to include the perpetrator in this has failed in terms of what we try to achieve and in terms of the image portrayed. So I acknowledge that, and I also commit to addressing that.
Marcus, I want to bring you in here. Obviously, you've got a huge stake in the school that you had attended. What do you make of it all?
So you know, UCBS, my interest is in the well-being of St. John's and the boys of St. John's, and not to, I don't want to shame them publicly unnecessarily, but really I've been disappointed by this this brand of reconciliation that they've punted, because in my mind, reconciliation requires firstly truthfulness, and secondly it requires remorse. And we've really seen neither of those from the school. The school has gone out of its way to obfuscate the truth and to try and cover up the tracks of the teacher. They've hired a PR company in the style of Bell Pottinger to try and cover up this mess. They have kept all of this under very confidential and under lock and key. Then in terms of remorsefulness, you know, I actually had a look at Mr. Arlo's affidavit last night, and there was no remorse on his part. He didn't come out and say, "I'm sorry, I made a huge mistake, please forgive me." In fact, he fought this tooth and nail for a year, and he denied all of the charges originally, and went so far as to accuse all of the boys that were leveling these accusations and that had survived his racism of lying and of conspiring against him. Now the school has found him guilty, the senior counsel has found him guilty, and now suddenly they're interested in reconciliation. Well, frankly, it's too late for that for me. Mr. Arlo wasn't interested in reconciliation a year ago, and I don't think we should be made to swallow reconciliation now, now that it's obvious that he's guilty of these things.
John, unless you have a factual dispute with what it is that Marcus has just narrated, presumably the conclusion of Marcus's sentiment is irresistible. Will the council move and tell the school to check whether it is legally possible for them to go further than the final written warning and simply fire him?
The answer to that is we're having those very discussions this morning. So if you want a brief answer, the answer is yes. And
what, yes, the discussion is happening, or yes, the council will recommend the school fire him?
The discussion is happening. The discussion is happening this morning. I've interrupted that discussion for this interview.
What is council's perspective?
Council's perspective is that the matter has not been adequately handled, that the image of the school is being tarnished because of that the justice needs to be seen to be done, and that we do need to follow some sort of reconciliation process moving forward. So there's a short-term approach in terms of addressing the issue at hand, which is the teacher and his remarks and the guilty finding, which is taking place right now. And there's a long-term perspective in terms of addressing issues of race at St. John's College throughout all our communities, and that is a series of processes that we will put in place exactly as Marcus has indicated we should. And you know, I just want to say further that I'm deeply, deeply regretful that it's come to this. You know, I as the chairman would never have wanted it to come to this, and perhaps many of us should have acted sooner. We put in place a process that we thought was independent, that would lead us down a road that would come up with a finding and a solution that would be objective. And we've been found wanting. And I'm not going to hide behind anything. I've tried to acknowledge the concerns of as many people as possible. And Marcus will tell you I was on the phone to him for 20 minutes last night. I've tried to engage with people, and we will continue to do so. I've just also come out of a meeting with some parents.
I want to ask you, just in the interest of time, John, there are two factual claims being made in the media, and I just want to confirm whether they are true.
Of course.
Is it true that the boys that were the subject of this racial abuse have been tied up in all sorts of non-disclosure agreements, firstly? And secondly, did the school hire a PR company to try and manage its image as opposed to prioritizing justice?
So the answer to the first one is no, it's not. There was a confidentiality agreement between the two legal teams. Just as a matter of interest, I'm actually the complainant in this matter. The school actually laid the charges. So that's important for people to understand. And between the two parties, as the case was progressing, there was a confidentiality agreement to prevent issues being debated in public. But the boys are not subject to any sort of non-disclosure agreement at all at the moment, So that's not true. In terms of a communications strategy, we have a communications department, a permanently employed marketing and communications person who co-opts communication companies from time to time, and that is what she has done in this particular case as well.
Okay.
She is in charge of the communication.
Marcus?
So Mabine Seabe, who's also an old Johannian, and I made contact with the school in March of this year when we when this came to our attention. And at the time, the school, Dr. Patricius, you'll remember, I emailed yourself and Mr. Paul Eady regarding the matter. Mm. And in particular, we were interested in whether the boys were being protected from Arlo and his racism. And we were interested in making contact with the boys. And firstly, I was assured that the boys would be protected, but I'm now reliably informed that Mr. Arlo went straight back into the classroom without any form of rehabilitation and without any form of protection for the boys. And secondly, I was told that the boys had signed non-disclosure agreements and that we couldn't make direct contact with the boys to make sure that they were safe. So it's either the case that we were lied to then, or it's the case that we're being lied to now. So I'd be interested to know where we're falling short here. Where's the disconnect?
Marcus, as far as I know, there were no non-disclosure agreements signed. I'm unaware of any. So I may be speaking, you know, I'm not at the school every day. That's, you know, I'm here in advisory capacity as a chairman, person of the board.
So you don't actually know whether there's a non-disclosure agreement?
No, as far as I know, there have been no non-disclosure statements, agreements signed by the boys, as far as I know.
So you don't know?
I don't know if that's
okay,
the
that's
case,
fine.
But as far as I know, they weren't. That's as much as I can say.
Okay, John, I'm going to ask you a last question, then I'm going to let it go because I know you want to get back to the meeting. For me, here's the fundamental issue. The most that can be said in, I don't know, in sort of macabre mitigation of St. John's is that this is not atypical of the country. But the bottom line is that you are one of the schools that sell yourself to be the best, amongst the best on the continent. And so you have a duty pedagogically to make sure that you think very carefully about institutional norms, culture, values, both the actual curriculum, the technical competence of your staff, but also the hidden curriculum, which often shapes what kind of young men it is you will release into the world. In that context, this is deeply, deeply shameful, isn't it, for the school to have been found wanting despite its putative reputation to the contrary?
CBS, I agree with you. I think we have a reputation to uphold and we have to carve a future for our young men at this institution which makes them leaders. And that's what we have to address. So we need to come out of this process much the wiser. And input from this discussion we're having, discussions that have taken place and will take place, will be fed into correcting the deficiencies in our system. So I agree with you and I concur. We have a duty and a responsibility, and we cannot claim to be a premier educational institution until we have addressed those.
Okay, John, I'm going to leave it. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate your stepping out of that meeting with the MEC and the school.
Most welcome. Bye-bye.
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
So there's a couple of issues I wanted to ventilate with you guys as old boys of the school. Firstly, there's a campaign that I've seen since I went on your social media account this morning and I saw it. Just speak to us about what's happening there and also what your perceptions are, you and Marcus, of how the alumni are seeing this. Because I've also seen one or two folks saying that apparently this is not homogenous. Don't just get Marcus on your show and Sizwe on, that there are disagreements here along both generational and racial lines.
Sure. Well, let me also link this to what Dr. Patricius ended with, because it's all well and good to speak in this flowery language. And, you know, St. John's, like many institutions in South Africa, has learned how to talk the talk. quite frankly, I don't care what they say anymore. They must now act. And there's going to be significant public pressure brought to bear on the school if they don't act. So my advice to Dr. Patricius is act speedily and stop with the flowery language. And that's exactly what we're doing. A number of concerned black alumni, and thankfully now there's a critical mass of us, and generally concerned members of the St. John's community are mobilizing and are organizing. We've asked for a meeting with the school. We have issued a public statement today. We want to lodge a complaint with the Human Rights Commission. And we want to generally bring public pressure to bear on this. As you say, of course a community like this is not united. In fact, much of the community is probably united in racism. We're not trying to convince the St. John's community this is right. The whole problem is that the St. John's community is steeped in a problematic tradition. We're trying to convince our country and our society that this is right. And the only way we're going to get institutions like this is if we have the help of other people from our society putting public pressure on institutions like St. John's to act. And don't be confused by the flowery language. Don't be confused by the reconciliation. Don't be confused by the intentions. We want to see action, or it's going to get very, very difficult for St. John's to sustain its so-called reputation of excellence.
Are you on board with that sentiment, Marcus?
So I agree largely with Cizwe in the sense that I think this is a broader... The problem that we're seeing at St. John's is a broader reflection of problems in society. But I think, as I said to you, it's an excellent institution, produces excellent students, like myself. I can't speak for CCA. and it should be leading public values. It should be a guiding light in society rather than dragging behind societal yes. values reluctantly in the way that they've been doing now. So we, Sizwe and I and Mabine Siabe and Ompile Ramela, who's been integral in organizing all of this, don't see this as a St. John's specific issue. We see this as a springboard to talking about racism in schools more generally and the lack of transparency that goes with it, at private schools and Model C schools and the entire education system in South Africa.
Kola in Randburg. Hello, Kola. Hi, Kola. Welcome to the conversation.
Hi, you see it. I just want to say that, you know, in all fairness, you know, they've missed the ball here completely. You know, they've really, really missed the ball. If there ever was a teaching moment where an institution like a school wants to teach people's wrong from right, repercussions and consequences, it was at that moment. They missed the ball. Because, unfortunately, in this incident, excuse me, the other thing that is also missed is that the teacher, apparently, from what I read also through the press, was that the slurs were targeted at a black kid, an Indian kid, and a Greek kid. So there are three levels that, you know, within this, whatever he said, that were targeted. Now, you ask yourself, if there was a race issue, the Indian and the black kid, then with the Greek kid, I don't know what was said. But how long, you see, this until that goes on to a homophobic child, a disabled child? Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So there are certain things that you have to stop dead at its tracks before it gets to the next level. We tell women that, listen, the moment a man hits you, leave, put a case before it gets to him doing it again, violence and murder towards women. So now we are saying, right, to kids, to be honest, to be, you know, tell the truth when something wrong happens and people will be punished. But now the kids are sitting there, they've done their due diligence, and the guy's still going to come back and get his job. I don't understand how St. John can justify that.
100%. And this is something you said to me in our conversation yesterday, Marcus, that the safety of those boys are clearly not paramount in how the school is playing this out. They have stare this powerful man in the eye on a daily basis as we speak in the name of Anglican reconciliation.
Yeah, you know, the school is interested in reconciliation for racists, but not reconciliation for survivors. And I think that's the real contradiction here. They let Arlo back into the class without rehabilitating him or without warning him or without putting adequate measures in place to protect the boys. And I have it from a reliable source that, in fact, he has racially abused boys since the complaints were laid. So in fact, our worst fears have come true. He he isn't rehabilitated, and he's carrying on as he did before. And in fact, you know, I'd like to put it to the school. I saw one mother, who I think is a St. John's mother, write online. What would the school do if this was a girls' school and there was a male teacher who was sexually abusing girls at the school? Would they say, oh, well, you know, we're actually interested in reconciliation. Let's throw this wolf back amongst the, amongst the kids. But the school has taken this line that they're interested in reconciling, the teacher with the boys, and they're interested in rehabilitating, the teacher. But frankly, I see that as anathema to the idea of reconciliation, and as the anathema to the idea of justice for these boys.
Okay, I want to ask you both, and just abuse, no pun intended, our acquaintanceship for another 10 minutes of conversation.
Sure.
Just to tease out some of the more institutional aspects here and the wider connections with the South African story, Sizwe. It is 11 o'clock. Here's the very latest in Eyewitness News.
This is Eyewitness News.